Welcome back to the podcast, you beautiful soul. I have an absolute gem and gift and mystic witch. I don't know how we want to introduce her. I've got, there's so many words I could use, and I've got an introduction for her. She sent through some of the many highlights. I'll let her expand on this for us. But Jessica Ann, an accomplished coach, teacher, mentor, and renowned for her work for impacting leaders who challenge the status quo. As the creator of the IICT globally accredited modality, hopefully I pronounce this right, the Metatonic Completion Method, and the founder of the Artemisia Energetics Academy, she has made significant contributions to the field of facilitation, business, and leadership. There is so much work more than that goes into Jess. It doesn't give her, it doesn't do it as much justice as you guys will see within this podcast. And I guess a disclaimer as well, and transparently, I'm working with Jess. So Jess is a teacher of mine, and I've been a client with Jess for 3 months, I think, coming up to 3 months now. So we'll be able to, and I'm very open to sharing with me vulnerability with you guys, with Jess's knowledge as well, of the work that we've been doing together and how it's completely transformed my life. And I guess with that being said, Jess, thank you for joining me today.
Super excited to be here, Lewis. So yeah, I was saying to you just before we jumped on, like, I feel like I've had so many downloads coming in through the dream space. So it's exciting to be here to share.
Beautiful. There's for people who are like the old Lewis, who are very like mass based, physics based, very like logically based, strap in, strap the fuck in. This is going to be a beautiful conversation, which will probably shift a couple of paradigms, a couple of perceptions and the way that you view things. And I guess the reason I'm sharing this before I get you to share your story, Jess, is I've come from, and I've shared this with you when we started working together, of someone who's come from a very, I guess, black and white, articulate, logical minded person, where it's like crystals and healing and energy and chakras and energy centers was all bullshit and all woo woo for me. And I got introduced to, I guess, my heart and mind started to open up about 7 years ago when I got introduced to Kerman Ray, and he started to sort of open me up into this world. And yeah, that was actually what drew me to work with you, because I'm like, you know what, healing, there's truth to it, where you hear these incredible transformations. I obviously got referred to you by a couple of friends as well. So I guess with that being said, what do you do? How the fuck do you answer that question? How do you answer that question to people?
It was funny. I actually had an experience a few months ago where someone took me into my own answer. It was like, if I could peel back all the layers to what sits at the core essence of what it is that I do, it really is to feel. It's the idea of, can we create safety to feel what is really there? So not just emotional feel, your feelings kind of feel, but also the other things that our subtle bodies are picking up, these extra sensory perceptions, the things that our instrument, our body is always attuned to that maybe consciously we're not aware of. And how do we start to build those bridges to pick up on that extra information, that extra data, and also potentially tap into some other gifts and perceptions that are really going to enhance what it is that we do.
Now, there was a lot in that. What, for in layman's terms, for someone listening to this, what do you do from, like, if there was a title you'd give yourself, if for, like, for me, like a Reiki healer, energy healer, like how do you, I guess, when people ask you, what do you do? How do you answer that from a title aspect?
So titular aspect, energetics trainer, because I have my mentorship academy. So I teach people how to do what it is that I do. And the other side of the work is teaching. I'd say I'm a teacher and mentor. So energetics trainer, teacher, mentor.
Beautiful. And what do you do for people? So as in, like, what do people come to you for? And maybe I'll share my story now with coming to you. I'm on my healing journey, and I see myself as the ultimate martial artist who's learning all of the martial arts to add to my toolbox to be able to heal anyone that comes through. And I've heard of, again, energy healing, Reiki healing, kinesiology. I've heard of these things, but I was, again, anti-woo-woo, crystals doesn't work, all bullshit. Give me the facts and figures. that was me. So I'd like to know, what is it that goes through your mind, or what is it that you're doing for people that come to you? And obviously people come to you for an array of different things. Maybe use me. Obviously you can't, you obviously have privacy for not talking about other clients you've worked with. What is it that you've been working with me for, to give people a bit of context? It's like, well, from my perspective, it's identifying things we haven't healed through, that I haven't healed through. And then you're seeing things that I don't see. You're feeling things that I don't, well, I guess I can't, I do feel I just can't, I guess, crack it in some sense or process it. And then you're being the conduit, and you're being able to be the sparky, as you've said with me, to be able to build that bridge to allow people to process, interact, etc. Yeah, how do you, what do you do when it comes to you facilitating and actually helping the people that you help?
So my biggest opportunity when I'm working with people is I'm deeply listening to where is it that their moment, like a bit like what you said, it's the idea of where are they not seeing themselves? Where are they currently unable to access aspects of self? So a big part of my mission is this idea of wholeness, allowing people to step into their wholeness. And a big part of that is this reclamation of felt sense of energy, would be one of the ways to put it. So often the way that my concept of belief, and so being that, you know, Lewis is an A-class mindset coach, like, so coming to you, you'd work with people around limiting beliefs and the thought structures and the matrix they've created in their mind to that affects their reality and how they perceive their reality. For me, what I'm feeling into is what energetic structures are sitting behind that. So this is the points that pre-verbal exchange are taking place. If you think about communication is only 7% words and 93% unspoken, my zone of genius is really tapping into this 93% of unspoken communication, which a lot of it is taking place in this energetic transference. So, you know, who were your parents when it came to you being met in your emotions as a child? Like, what was unspoken to you around emotional expression? That would be one of those things that we'd be looking to address and start to unpick, like, what energetic information is potentially stored in your system that is continuing to create those circling patterns. So despite these incredible mindset techniques you may have come across, there may be still some residue or things sitting under the surface that are reinforcing those patterns in a way that mindset work can get so far and so close. And you, like, even when you came to me, you said, like, I had this sense that there's just something just out of reach for me. And that's where the energy work really comes in. It's that nonverbal, somatically, often somatically and energetically stored data that is influencing our behaviors. Yeah.
Just to touch on that, what you mentioned, the thing that drew me to, I guess, the decision I made to explore this world is I was just hanging out with my beautiful fiance, and I had a burger for dinner. I didn't have the healthiest dinner, and I had got a bit of indigestion, and my partner said, oh, would you like a massage? Like around your sort of, your digestive system, around your organs, like around your diaphragm, just to sort of massage your food through. And I said, you know what? Why not? That sounds really nice. And when she was doing it, she started touching me. I was really sensitive and I felt a lot of anxiety. That was the emotion that I felt anyways, or nervousness or sensitivity. And she said it, my beautiful partner is very sensitive to energy as well. And she said, you've got a lot of stored energy in your body. And I was like, you're so fucking right. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, well, what the fuck is it? What is it? Where's it coming from? So when you're working with someone, what is it that's going through your head? What's like, what are you looking for? What are you feeling for? And then how do you be that bridge to be able to connect it, to allow that person to, I don't know what word you'd use, of shift the energy, dissolve the energy, process the energy, release the energy that I would assume that people are holding on to since like childhood, since like they were even in the womb space when they were 3 months old and dad was really emotionally volatile. And then that scared fears in your nervous system, and it's been stored there for 30 years, 40 years, whatever it may be. How do you, I guess, come into tune with it, be aware of it, have the consciousness of it, and then how do you bridge the gap to allow that to, I guess, be healed or released, whatever terms you use?
So the way that I engage with energy is that I'm feeling, so anybody that is listening to this, you can feel energy. It's not as though yes, I have devoted my life to this work. Yes, I do a lot of things to enhance that ability. But just like anybody could do a squat, your squat may look different to mine. However, like, you can feel energy. We all can. If you've ever had a vibe off a person or a place, that's energy. So what I'm attuning to when I'm working with someone is I am feeling vibration. I'm looking for things in their system where potentially energy is not flowing. So the way that I work with somebody is I'm feeling into, right, where is energy moving? Where is it stuck? And wherever it's stuck is where I start to get curious. So the way that these things come through to me when I first started working with this is that I would feel a shift. So it might feel like, okay, so the rest of your body is feeling like there's something moving. And then I'd get to, say, the stomach in this instance, and it would feel as though it would just be like a dead spot. So it's like, okay, so it doesn't feel like it's moving there. The more I've worked with energy, the more that I now actually have a visual representation of what it is that I'm seeing, feeling. So now it's more of a case of, right, I can see where there is blocks. Part of my role as a facilitator and as a mentor is then being able to bring the person who I'm working with awareness to that. So they may have a sense, in this case for you, Lewis, like you knew, it's like there's something going on with the solar plexus. What I did was then using the Metatonic Completion Method, which is the modality that I've created, I was able to support you to start to bring your awareness to that point and create enough presence and awareness of what was there to then support you and facilitate you to go back to the point that that was actually anchored in your system. So we represent stuck energy in our energy body, often through these visual representations. Like if you actually start to attune, we can see, we develop these senses of being able to be like, oh, actually I can see that this is stored as like a yellow box over the top of my stomach. It's just like, that can sound really woo. But it's starting to understand that the unconscious communicates in symbols. So we're filtering energetic information through our unconscious, which is then processing it as a symbol. So that's where we work with that symbol to then go back, trusting that we can actually connect with that initial imprint, resolve the energy there, and then it can be completed and released.
For anyone listening to this right now, how can they start to maybe become a little bit more in tune to their energy? What's stuck within them? Is it something that they can without necessarily working with you, which obviously we'll plug you in towards the end. If someone's listening to this right now, how can they start to, I guess, be aware of their own energy, maybe turn the antenna up a little bit and the input up to actually be aware of, hey, look, I've got some blockages here, some nervousness here, some a kink in the hose here. And how they become aware of it, and what can they start doing to start to actually de-kink the hose?
So one of the things that I will offer, like to people listening, is I have got a guided video for you guys to start working with, just to start to ground and center your energy. The intention of that is when you start grounding and centering, you start to notice where the energy is not flowing. So one of the ways and the mechanisms, if you want to get scientific about it, that this kind of works is that we're working with that suspension of the critical faculty, which you may have heard if you've come across hypnosis before, but it's essentially dropping down the veil between the conscious and the unconscious mind. So when we visualize, we're starting to open into senses that we're not necessarily using consciously. So through the guided visualization, you can actually start to sense and have a feeling for where things are stuck. Biggest obstacle that often people will face when they start this work is they doubt themselves. It's like, am I making this up? Is this just because somebody told me this one time that my sacral chakra is blocked? And my invitation is to get curious. The biggest part of developing these senses is practice. It's re-exposure and starting to attune to, okay, what happens when I do this? And starting to actually have your own experiential evidence of what it feels like.
Mm. I think something that just to mirror that is we've done, I don't know how many sessions are now, I think maybe 5-6 sessions now. And I remember, I don't know which one it was, but there was, you're like, closing my eyes, getting me centered, doing some breath work. And it was like, go to, I think it was solar plex, I'm pretty sure. And like, you're just asking me questions like, what color is it? What shape is it? What is it? What's the texture of it? And it's like, subconsciously, it's like you just say what comes up. And I think that's something, I think what you're saying too is a lot of people feel like, is this me just making shit up because I'm meant to do it, or is this like it's coming up for a reason, right? So I think I'm just sharing this for anyone listening to this that goes and does what you're saying, is just allow whatever I guess comes to come through you, because your subconscious, it's like it has the answers. It's like that term, like get out of our own way. It's like it's, you're trying to overcomplicate it, overthink it. What, blah, blah, that, why is this coming up? You don't have to fucking know, just let it come through you. So yeah, any more advice for people on that, of how to, I guess, maybe just embrace that subconscious or that intuition, that spirit that actually has this divine intelligence, and like the access that we have to the quantum field and the universal consciousness that we have. It's like you said, that trusting that it's actually is right and doesn't have to necessarily have all the facts and figures around it to actually make sense. It's just, it makes sense. So do you have any advice for people to, I guess, maybe allow that to flow through them a little bit more?
So one of the biggest opportunities that I feel that we have is actually allowing yourself for a while to feel like you're making it up. Because that idea of just playing in the possibility, that suspension of it needing to mean anything, and just actually treating it like an experiment, is really powerful way to start to release some resistance around it. It's like, what if it's okay that I'm kind of just playing with this just to see what happens? Like, there is a, you know, if you think about children, children are so in tune with energy. They're so in tune with their bodies. They're so in tune with what's happening. And a lot of that is because they're not attached to it, need to look a specific way or do a specific thing. So it's when we have these strong attachments to what we think we have to do or how it's meant to be, that often we do get in our own way. So just give yourself permission to play with it.
I'd like to go into a topic that I'm kind of just sort of mirroring all the work we've done so far. Something that you really helped me with was, I guess, utilizing my sexual energy a lot. I think we had the example of having like that block at the sort of the heart center or below. So it's like I had all this sort of pent up sexual energy above, and I had all this sort of head heavy energy up top, and it wasn't really flowing through me, I guess, in a healthy way, or not healthy way, an optimal way is probably the word that sort of comes to mind. So I think I would like for you to just sort of share on your experience of actually allowing people to embrace their sexual energy in a healthy way, to be able to circulate that in a healthy way through like even the tantric touches and the homework and the exercise that I've been doing for myself, because since doing that, it's allowed me to be more creative. It's allowed me to be more expressed, to have more energy, to be more productive. I had heard of this before we started working together, that it's in the book, I think it's Think and Grow Rich, like sexual transmutation. It's like using that like ultimate like fucking fountain of like this beautiful, strong, creative energy, and actually using it in healthy ways. And I'm saying this because I've come from a big porn addiction, and when I was growing up, and not being able to embrace my full masculinity. And the book that you recommended that I finished the other week, it's like, yeah, I'd like to get your thoughts on being able to help people maybe tap into and embrace, maybe not just sexual energy, or just all of their energy centers in a more holistic, flowing way. Do you have any comments on that?
So with the way that I was speaking before, talking about energetic imprints and starting to feel where things are flowing and blocked, one of the ways is through awareness and starting to look at those representations in the energy body. Another way is through touch. So, you know, the tantric tradition has known this for centuries. It's beginning to bring awareness and bring touch and sound and movement into those spaces that where potentially energy is getting stuck. And sexual energy is one of the most, as you said, one of the most potent forms of energy that we have access to. If you think about it, it's this idea that sexual energy is the portal that brings life to earth. So of course we're going to have more vitality if we are flowing and circulating this energy. It is like it's life force energy. So in terms of being able to circulate more of this sexual energy, one of the biggest opportunities for most people is actually getting really comfortable with sound.
Yeah.
It's like even before you get into touch, which sometimes can be quite triggering for people, yeah, have a play with sound. Like the reason I keep bringing in this concept of play is that it takes the seriousness out of it. And you can access so many other dimensions of yourself when you're willing to play with it. So my advice would be when you're on your own or you're in your car and you're just maybe having a drive, play with sound. Like if I could make a sound to describe how I feel right now, what would that sound be? And prepare for it to be a bit clunky and a little bit awkward. But those are the kind of things that once we start rehearsing in private, start calibrating our nervous system to hearing ourselves making sound, when we take that into, say, a practice with ourselves, or we take that into a practice with our partner when we're engaging sexually, starting to bring some of that, you know, sound of our own pleasure and starting to actually allow that to be present in our lovemaking experiences, it starts to dissolve a lot of the barriers that potentially we're holding.
Something I've been doing like a lot of growth outside of working with you in this area, but you have just been like the fucking turbocharge into it and the integrating of it. And just the sound can be a way from a sexual aspect, a way to, I guess, express your energy as well, to not like in the bedroom aspect, it builds up and builds up, and you kind of like men especially try to stay so stoic and peaceful and like not breathe and like pent it all up versus and letting it actually regulate. It's like letting the steam out of the bottle. So that was really a big eye opening for me, and being able to embrace the awkwardness. And do you have any tips on that? Because that's really helped me working with you. I think, yeah, the ability to play with sound, to play with touch, to play with anger, which is one of my next questions from our last session. Yeah. Do you have anything else for people to just embrace, I guess, awkwardness, feeling weird, being able to, I guess, like explore this, I guess, not out of the box. I don't know. I don't think that's the right way to explain it, but just like being able to just access, like kind of what you started this podcast with, access those parts of themselves, whether it's maybe de-learning things, putting the walls down, putting the mask down, because like kids, like you said, the kids are such pure embodiments of who we are authentically. Yeah. Any tips on for people to actually embrace that sort of uncomfortableness of the unknown, of feeling awkward, feeling weird, being stupid, like this is not for me, whatever it may be. Do you have any tips with that?
I feel that capacity to rehearse in private is such a sacred thing. It's like those abilities to even just as personal trainery as this sounds, I wasn't the fitness industry before, but even just that commitment to like, I'm just going to play with this for 5 minutes. Like I'm just going to put a timer on my phone for 5 minutes and I'm going to sit in that weirdness and the uncomfortableness of playing with my sound for 5 minutes. You know, I'm going to tell my partner they may hear some weird things coming from the bedroom. I'm going to make it so that I'm in a space where I can be free from judgment or feel free from judgment, because most of the judgment is coming from the self anyway. So free to judge myself without the fear of external judgment, sitting for 5 minutes and just playing, like what happens, you know, those rehearsals in private, that's where so much of when I am supporting people to start to access and move that sexual energy, it's through self-pleasure practice first.
Yeah.
It's beginning to create that safety internally so that when we take this to the external world, like we know we've got ourselves.
Yep. Just one little caveat on that is I have a friend, he's a coach of mine. I won't use his name here, but he's we always talk and we sort of share it with what we're working on. And he said, I told him I was working with you. And he's like, oh, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I've actually started doing self-pleasure practices and where it's like you circulate energies. His comment was just really funny. He's like, oh, that's weird. I thought you just have a jerk off. I thought that's all you do. So maybe just a little comment on that of like when you say self-pleasure, what's the purpose behind it? Obviously, there can be many purposes. What's the sort of main purpose behind actually conscious? Because I'm the same. I thought it was just like, you just jerk off because it feels good. It feels nice, feels good. Get a release of that pressure perceived anyways. But yeah, how do you, I guess, do that in a healthier, more conscious way?
I love that you bring that up because that is 100% the reaction I get all the time. It's just like, oh, so we're going to masturbate. It's just like, yeah. Well, maybe, yeah. Not necessarily.
Yeah.
You know, so the reason I use the word self-pleasure, if anyone listening to this is like, this is really my vibe, I want to go deeper. One of the books I would recommend is Existential Kink by Carolyn Elliott. It's brilliant in terms of beginning to dissolve the walls between this idea of pleasure and pain. You know, that old 80s song, It's a Fine Line. It's the idea that energy, when we're able to come back and detach from the stories and the ideas we have around the feelings that we're having in our body. So yes, maybe that energy got into our body from something that was quite hard to experience at the time. But if we can actually peel back the stories and the expectations, the sensation in and of itself can be pleasurable. So it's like we're actually experiencing the pleasure of sensation rather than the narrative or the expectations we have around it. So through a self-pleasure practice, we're starting to actually gain comfortability with sensation. We're experiencing the pleasure of sensation, both interoceptively, so in the internal body as well as the external body. So we're starting to actually create comfortability with sensation and allow that to be pleasurable.
This might tie into something you mentioned towards the start, or maybe before we even started recording, but the concept of like we store those energy kinks or those energy blocks from childhood, I guess, energetically imprinted from our parents' upbringing, society, teachers or whatever it may be. Can you lean into that? Like, what do you mean by that? So people, you can imprint energetically, I guess, blocks or challenges or I guess negative energy in quotations. But then that can manifest in the unhealthy habits or patterns or destructive patterns that you have, self-sabotaging patterns that you have to this day. Can you lean into that? Does that tie into what you're just talking about then of like, say it's circulating and dissolving, regulating, moving that kink or that that block? Are they linked together or am I getting them a little bit different?
No, you're bang on. So the way that I would explain this, and usually I do with my certification students, so I don't know why I said that so strangely. Welcome to my world. So everything is energy, So if we think about the tangible five senses, of course, you know, light is perceiving, you know, photons, it's like it's an energetic frequency. So anything that is we're experiencing through our felt senses is energetic transference. So sound is energy vibrating, all of those things. So energy is interacting with the body. So when we have an experience, we're receiving an emotion, like an energetic package. So that is coded with multiple layers of data. So some of that data is physical sensation. Some of that data is emotional sensation. So if you think about the concept of mirror neurons, like science is catching up to the idea that we are picking up on all of these emotional frequencies. So when we have an experience, we're receiving a packet of data, which is coded with multiple energetic layers. So depending on our threshold, so maybe our nervous system would be a great example. So if you have an energetic packet of data coming towards you that is way too much for you to handle, that's when we would experience something like dissociation. However, that energetic package hasn't gone away. We've still received that packet of data. So what happens? We store it. It's like, okay, this will be resolved later. I'm just going to put this over there. So the energy, because energy can't be created or destroyed. It's only ever transferred. So if we haven't actually allowed this to move through us and transferred the energy, it's still sitting stuck in the system. So what that then creates is that this unresolved energetic data or imprint, when experiences paralleling that experience occur, that's what we call a trigger. So it's like, oh, okay, so now this experience is vibrating with that experience that's stuck in my field. And then we default to the thing that we did to cope with it the first time. So this is where we start to have that loading. So we have the energetic sensation, the feeling that is then accompanied with that. So the interpretation, like how do I feel about that being activated? And what thoughts does that those feelings create? And what behaviors did I execute to deal with those thoughts and feelings? So this is how we get into those loops.
Yeah. And then, well, the answer, depending on the modality, oh, there's many modalities to do it, is to identify that through whether a trigger or inner work or whatever, I guess, expression you're going through. And then again, what is the word that you use? Do you use release, process, integrate, heal? They're like the words I kind of interchangeably use. What do you use when, what word do you use to actually, yeah, I guess, fix the problem? It's not a problem, but yeah, what do you use?
So I often will use interchangeably release, integrate, or complete.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. And any other tips on that for people that are listening to this? Like, okay, you know what? My mum, my dad, my brother, my sister, my teachers, they made me feel scared, unsafe, hurt, unworthy, whatever. And I've got this energetic imprint that's in me. And there's a book behind me. It's called The Body Keeps the Score, which I think you may be familiar with. And it's, I forget his name. I can't pronounce his name. It's like some German name. And it's like you might forget it, but your nervous system won't. And it's like, and that's where the triggers will set off. And that's where, like, I had that, I guess, subtle trigger of like, you know what, there's some nervousness energy in me. It's triggering me there. There's like, I always say, like, your triggers are your gifts, because it's showing you the awareness of where the chink in the armor is. And so that's where you can lean into it and start to do your inner work, whether it's processing or healing or meditating or plant medicines, if you want to go down that pathway as well. Is there any other advice that you give people who are picking up what we're throwing down, that, you know what, I do get triggered. I have this, I feel blocked. I feel tense. I have these energetic residues left over from my dad, from my mom. Is there any other advice that you'd give these people?
So one of the biggest opportunities around looking at this energetic imprinting and these things that are existing in our field, in our energy body, is first of all, recognize that, a bit like what you were saying before, that there are inherent gifts and opportunities in terms of what we can learn about ourselves. I've seen so many people go down the garden path of like, I need to be fixed because I'm broken. It's just like, that's part of why I talk about this idea of completion and integration. It's like, well, no, you're not broken. It's all about this journey, like recognizing you're already whole. And all we're doing is calling you further back into wholeness. And anything that's obstructing that wholeness, we're allowed to let that go and call those parts of us back. So that would be the first frame that I would add, that this is something you're choosing for yourself rather than having to do. And in terms of the practicalities of that, starting to get curious, just like, okay, just noticing what happens for me when I'm triggered. Like, what am I actually feeling? Like, where am I feeling that in my body? Like, so, because so often it can become almost like it's no longer localized. We're like, my whole body is triggered. It's like, well, if I could actually breathe, be with myself, feel my feet. Feeling your feet is one of the like gateway hacks to starting to come back into your body. Can I feel my feet? And then actually just starting to notice if I could tell where this is actually most present in my system, where is that? And that will start to reveal to you where you've actually stored this for processing later.
Beautiful. Any mental, either breath work, visualization exercises? I know you've done one with me that I've stolen. I use all the time now with my clients, about just like breathing, centering, grounding yourself, coming into present, being aware of your heart, the light around your heart, the connection to the source above. Or is that what you said? You said you'll that link that I'll leave below in the comments. Is that what you were referring to before about like some practices for people to actually start to actually be grounded, come back to center and actually like, actually, I learned this from Kerwin. It's like so many people live in such a stressed, sympathetic state. They don't know what their baseline is. It's like, it's kind of like you're flying first economy the whole time, which is, let's say, nothing wrong with economy, but say it's like not optimal. It's like you're living in stress. It's like you don't know what actual neutral is. It's like you're just always, you're always on. So to be able to actually come back and actually have the awareness and the presence to be like, you know what? It's showing up with my heart. It's showing up in my stomach. It's showing up with my feet. It's showing up with my throat, my third eye. Yeah. Is there anything else besides that that link that I'll leave below for the training or the resources? Anything you'd say to people to actually give them the tools to be able to actually start to come back to center, whether it's like, I wrote down the word meditation, intuition, visualization. Is there anything that you'd add on to that for people to start to actually come back to center?
So definitely, like you said, the resource is great because it's just that first out of the gate, like this is the step-by-step process to start to ground and center yourself. Beyond that, once you've actually started to calibrate, and I'd say that that is a practice that if you can start to incorporate that, let's get realistic, at least 3 times a week. Ideally, I would love it if you're doing it every day. Like I feel that this should be part of what I call energetic hygiene. These are the coming back to baseline, like you mentioned, those. Once we are actually able to come back to our baseline, we start to understand when we're not at our baseline. And that's when we start to calibrate like, oh, okay, maybe there's something I'm holding on to here. So the more that we're aware of our baseline, the more we notice when we're not there. And it's not a bad thing to leave our baseline. That's called living. But it's more like this idea of if we're forever away from home, like we really can't tell where we're projecting our energy from. We're not actually being in awareness of where we're moving from. We're just reacting to the external stimulus. So definitely start with that video. Once you've actually started to experience the that centeredness, the next thing would be to start to actually bring awareness through the center of the body. So I started to visualize bringing that light that I speak about in the video, starting to actually bring that through from the crown down through the third eye center, through the throat, through the heart, and just noticing. So what do I notice as I bring my awareness into each of these points? And just, again, starting to cultivate that curiosity around, okay, where do I feel like it feels really great to go there? It's like, oh, I feel awesome here. And maybe where do I feel less inclined? Where do I kind of want to rush past?
Yeah.
And starting to get, okay, maybe if yesterday I had to rush past my heart, can I take a few more breaths at the heart? Can I, you know, breathe here for another couple of breaths before moving on? So that sounding breath awareness, these are all tools to start to cultivate that shift, or, you know, completion of energy, and also starting to calibrate the safety to be present with the energy.
Love it. The theme that I keep hearing is just curiosity, leaning into it and allowing that intuitive, like just let it, it's, I would assume, like you said, it's a muscle that you can strengthen. Like the more you use it, the more in tune, like you said, you now seeing colors and shapes of the work that you're doing, and just giving yourself permission to actually allow that gift to flow through you. One question before I go into the question I was about to ask, the gift, does everyone have the gift of actually being able to energetically see things, feel things? Like you said, like everyone can squat, it's like to what degree, and you can always improve that. How can people, I guess, understand their gift and actually strengthen their gift for themselves and potentially others?
So one thing I will say is that we can calibrate to pretty much all of these senses that I've spoken about. So like seeing the energy block, feeling the energy block, hearing the energy block in some contexts. It's just about starting to release expectation of what you think it has to feel like. Often when I'm working with clients, it'll be like, am I doing it right? It's like, are you getting information? It's like, yes, great. It's like, your information might be different to mine. Like I have clients that just kind of know, they just have a sense of knowing. It's like, oh, I know it's here. It's like they're not feeling it, but they just know it. So there may be different gifts or different senses that are stronger for you. And the more that you can continue to strengthen the pathways with those and get curious, what I tend to find is that the next sense will open. So like I said, I started with feeling. I think it was actually knowing, if I'm really honest. I go back, it was a knowing, then it was a feeling, then it was the seeing. So we do all have different abilities. Some will be stronger than others. And it is really just a choice to open. You know, like if you think about kids, they're constantly seeing things and, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, they're making it up. But I often think that kids are perceiving things that potentially we as adults have shut off to.
Okay. I've got one topic that I know you're going to love, but I'll save that one for next. You'll love this one too. Coming back to the work that we've done from the embodying that healthy anger, the healthy warrior with me, we spoke about, I can't remember the words, obviously, to get you to share it, but the suppression of the healthy masculine, the kind of like the demonization of like this, I use the Andrew Tate of the world. He's probably the extreme of the example of this, like I can see centering in the book, sort of the traits of the probably wounded masculine, a wounded warrior within him. Just like the sort of the extreme sort of like go-getter anger aspect. I'd like to know your thoughts on the submission of the masculine, men and women as well, and feminine as well, of how it's, I don't even know how to word it. I'll just leave it with that. I'll let you talk from there because you know this topic better than I do, is just how we as men, especially masculine and women as well, is like we're programmed and dissolved and energetically, I guess, skewed off our authentic path of actually embracing all sides of us, like you've mentioned, to be the best version of us, to integrate all of us, to not, I think Dean Martini says it well, it's like your level of self-worth is based on how many parts of yourself you learn to love or learn to integrate. So I'd love to know, yeah, I guess your thoughts on that. I didn't really ask the question that elegantly then, but the suppression of the masculine and how that shows up, and you can obviously use me as an example because that's something we're working on, where it's like I wasn't embracing, it's like I had judgment towards, I guess, the anger of the masculine because that was bad for my upbringing with my dad, versus, you know what, that's actually part of the masculine, that's part of a healthy expression, I just don't have the healthy expression of it right now. Your thoughts on that? I know that's a bit of a mumbled question, but yeah, what's your thoughts on, I guess, how that's happening and how we can start to embrace those parts of ourselves as masculine, as feminine energies as well?
Such a big question. So I also get why, like, it's hard to sort of pin where to start in so many ways. So I think you did well. So for me, this is one of the topics that I have a lot of passion for. It's like, it's actually funny the amount of times I type stuff out to post and then delete. I'm just like, you know, without context, this is probably not going to serve anybody. However, it's just like I have so much passion for these integrations, these aspects of self, because I see it play out in so many dimensions of our lives. So first of all, when I speak to, like, you know, when Lewis and I are talking about this masculine and feminine, suspending this outside of biological sex. So that'll be the first thing. So if we're going to have this conversation, let's move it outside of biological sex for a second, and then I'll talk about how this does relate to gender roles.
Yeah.
So another way to think about masculine and feminine energies might be like your yin and your yang. So like naturally the yin energy is receptive. You know, part of why that correlates to the feminine is like if you think about our anatomy, it's the receptive organ.
Yeah.
And then the masculine is the yang, it's the penetrative organ, penetrative energy. So part of what has kind of got skewed in society is that we have been knocked off center around what's okay in terms of our levels of receptivity and our penetrativeness. It's like, you know, the idea that we've kind of rounded the edges off our expression. It's almost like when you have a newborn baby and suddenly you've got to baby proof everything and like lock the cupboard doors and put soft corners on everything. I feel like we've kind of done that as a society to try to protect each other from authentic expression. And the cost of that is that when we disown, when we distort and edit this authentic expression, it will play out in shadow. So that's where, you know, when you talk about Andrew Tate, often he is this shadow expression of these parts of the masculine that we've rounded off. It's like, okay, we can't be in our penetrative energy. So therefore it's just like, I am going to be an extreme example of that. It's like, it's the overcompensation for something that's underexpressed. And conversely, in this feminine dimension, it's like we've sort of fetishized certain aspects of the feminine as a society. It's just like, this is what we want from the feminine. This is what receptivity means. And this is what feminine expression should look like. So as a result of that, we have other aspects of the feminine that aren't being expressed. So an example of that would be the powerful feminine. And when we look at motherhood as an archetype, and again, we're sort of getting into the role of biological sex again, but it's just such a great way to look at stark examples of it in society. If we look at the archetype of the mother, often it's considered that it's just like, oh, a mother is in her masculine when she's had children because she's protective. It's like, not really. There is still a strong aspect of this feminine force. It's like, it's, there is a, how do I describe it? It's still a dimension of the feminine. It's not a woman being in her masculine when she's mothering. And the other side of the feminine is this more, we resist chaos and we resist death. And that's the other side of the feminine. If she's the birth portal, she's also the death portal. So we resist death in Western societies. So that's something that happens in the corner.
Yeah.
So again, like there's willingness to let things go, willing to let things evolve and be released. It's like, you know, we look at the seasons. The seasons are a perfect representation of this masculine and feminine integration. It's like autumn, it's a feminine expression. It's like it's the letting go of things to be dissolved. So that's where, as a society, we've kind of tried to make it too tidy around what these natural processes are and these natural yin and yang cycles of our own expression and also our human interactions.
I like the term you use then. It's like, would you say softening the edges? That really, really speaks to me. It's like, we want people to be masculine, but not too masculine. We want people to be feminine, but only the feminine that we want, right? Or I guess society collectively wants. Why is that? The words I wrote down as you were talking was shame and guilt. Is that, it's like shame. I don't know, is there, use your words if those are some of the words. Why are we doing this as a society, as a collective, in your opinion? Why are we bastardizing certain archetypes of the I guess, the warrior in the man, of the one who is the hunter, is the killer, is the achiever, where it's like, that's too much. We want you to be more feminine, but then we complain there's no fucking masculine men these days. And it's like you can't fucking win. It's like, yeah, like if you, yeah, it's like you can be masculine, not too masculine, but if you're not too masculine, you're too feminine. We don't want that. You want to be more masculine. It's like, it's a weird paradox that, I guess, I'm speaking from my behalf anyways, and a lot of men that I know, that's a big paradox that I see a lot of men in, and obviously women in their equivalent. As a whole, why do you think, is it guilt, is it shame, is it conditioning, is it past pain, is it past suppression finally resurfacing? Like, where's it all come from?
It's there's many layers of it, but one of the ones that really, I guess, sticks out for me is the generations of manufactured polarity that have existed. It's this idea of, we really did push the idea of these yin and yang expressions to their extreme. Men are in this expression and they're hyper masculine and they're hyper penetrative, and women need to be in the yin and hyper receptive and submissive. So of course we have this then, and this comes back to that energetics conversation. Naturally, when we push something to the end of a spectrum, we're creating momentum, and like energy isn't created or destroyed, it's only ever transferred. So we have kinetic potential energetically. So naturally, if we think back to the idea, one of my big passion topics as well as hermeticism, and the idea of the pendulum, there's a cosmic pendulum that's always regulating energy. So when we go to one extreme, naturally, we will need to pendulate to the other to neutralize the energy. So I think what we're seeing now is a swing back to this opposite end of the spectrum. So it's like, where men were only allowed to be penetrative, now they're only allowed to be submissive.
Yeah.
So what that's then creating is, it's a distortion, but to the other extreme.
I love that. I'm just letting that sink in for a bit. That was very good. We haven't touched on your love language yet, astrology. And we haven't actually worked on it yet. That's have we? I don't know, maybe you've been sprinkling in with the work that we've done.
I occasionally drop little things, like, you know, I seed things. It's like, Lewis, this is an important weekend.
Yeah, okay. I got one of the best compliments from you through a referral, so you know it's a true compliment when someone else says they heard her. A neutral connection, one of the people that referred you to me, Cody, I just went to his event literally yesterday. He said, I might be paraphrasing here, but he said, oh, how's it like working with Jess, yourself? And I said, oh, really good. And he started smiling. I said, oh, why do you ask? You sound like you're enjoying that. He says, oh, I spoke to her yesterday, asked, and what's it like working with Lewis? And he gave me one of the best compliments. She said, she loves it. He says, you're super skeptical, but super open-minded. it's like perfect combination. So for me, I've still definitely got the skeptical glasses on astrology, because it doesn't make sense to me. And it's probably because of the references I have is like people that use it as the label, as the excuse. It's like, I'm like this because I'm this person. I'm a Aries. I don't even know the other ones, to be honest. But it's like, I'm an Aries, and it's like, I'll have these, this is about a year, 2 years ago, opening my heart and mind to the world of energetics. I'll have like this, went to a yoga, there was a micro dosing of cacao and a tiny bit of psilocybin in it as well, and there's this beautiful, like, very goddessy feminine essence that was there, and she came up to me and gave me a big hug, and she's like, oh my god, I love you. And I was like, thank you. For what? She's like, I just love your energy. I said, she's like, what's your star sign? And like my flags went up. I'm like, oh, what do you think it is? And she literally guessed five in a row that weren't mine, or four in a row that weren't mine. And I'm like, well, I thought you meant to know this. But so for myself included, and for the people listening, why is it your love language? Where's the truth in it? Why do you love it? And how can people use it? Most importantly, how can we actually use it to, I'm not sure how you would use it to understand who you are, to be more authentic, to understand your calling a little bit more. Yeah, I'm sure you could speak for hours on this one, so you got about 15 minutes, so go.
I was just like wow. So the other thing about you as well, with that Aries expression, like Aries is the cardinal fire, so it's penetrative, and fire in the elemental structure is, it's a masculine energy. So the idea for you, like, it has been safe in the past to round that edges off, because it's actually part of your soul's expression is to bring that cardinal fire. So probably part of why there was that sort of sense of her, like, I can't place you as an Aries, is because for you in the past, it hasn't been as safe to be in your cardinal fire. It's just like, oh, I've had to, you know, be polite about the fact that I've actually got, but you look at your results in business, it looks like the Aries is there. It's like that CEO vibe, like, I'm bringing the fire. Anyway, that's a digression. I was like, okay, I can see how that would have played out. But yeah, that would probably be my reasoning behind that. Either that or she doesn't know the archetypes very well. Who knows? But the reason that I love astrology is, if, again, my background, despite what you're hearing today, I actually come from a very scientific, very skeptical kind of frame of reference as well. Even though I grew up around a lot of this stuff, like, my dad had what we loosely term an awakening when I was about 9. And as a result, he didn't really have any mates around him to talk about that with. So he'd talk about it with his eldest daughter. So I got all the benefit of that. But even as I was growing up, I still was deeply in love with science. Like, I loved the idea of being able to observe, like, you know, cause and effect, and what is creating what it is that I'm seeing in front of me. So I still consider myself a bit of a spiritual scientist. So even when I started to delve into this world, when I first started coming across astrology, I didn't actually like it very much. Like, I was so curious about it. I'm like, this is so cool. Like, what do you mean that, you know, the placement of the cosmos is affecting my personality? But I'm a Gemini sun. And whenever I would look at my star sign horoscope, I'd be just like, it just doesn't land for me. Like, I'm naturally a very introverted person, but apparently I'm a social butterfly. I'm like, doesn't land. But as I sort of went deeper down the rabbit hole, because it kept circling back as things that tend to be part of your fate tend to. And then I learned about the idea of doing your whole chart. It's this idea of, like, you actually are this combination of 7 personal planets and then an additional 3 interpersonal planets, and they are affecting your personality and what it is that makes you you. And from that perspective, I was like, oh, wow, okay. So, like, now I'm curious again, you know, as I've mentioned before, curiosity is the gateway. What does that then say about me? And that was when, like, the blinkers came off. I'm like, oh, my gosh, like, this is scarily accurate around all of the dimensions of who I am and where I've been and what interests me. So it was at that point I was just like, okay, there is something here. So diving deeper down the rabbit hole, like, astrology has been something that has not only been studied in the Western world. Like, I often tend to find that things that resonate at the highest truth tend to have had multiple occurrences in multiple cultures throughout time. It's like if you look at the Chinese culture, they have a very strong history of astrology. They still use astrology. Chinese millionaires and billionaires use astrology now to make business decisions. You've got the Ayurvedic tradition and Vedic astrologies, like Indian culture, you know, centuries old. They've been mapping the stars and using that to inform different things, including the way that we deal with health. And then you've got this Western esoteric tradition and our interpretation of astrology. So the idea that we have all of these places mapping the stars, mapping the behavior of what's happening on the material plane in correlation with what's happening with the stars. So that for me is, I think, a healthy gateway to start looking at the relationship between astrology and the planets and the material realm as correlation to start off with. It's like, okay, so we have centuries, if not millennia, worth of data around when these planets are in this particular position, these specific events start to happen. It's like, and we have this again and again and again. It's like, even if we think about what they call the nodes. So the nodal shift is a relationship with the moon and the earth. And the nodal shifts tend to correspond with thematic shifts in terms of where the psyche is, like the zeitgeist is reflecting. So if we go back to say 2020, we had a nodal shift. We had a Gemini North node, Sagittarius South node. Sagittarius is the traveler. He goes abroad. He was in the South. The South is what we're moving away from. What happened in 2020? The world shut down, no international travel. Then we move into 2022 and we had the nodal shift into Taurus. Taurus North node, Scorpio South node. That's the money axis. What happens? We have a recession. So it's like we have these maps and patterns of these correlations between planetary movements and these things that are occurring on Earth. So part of how we can use astrology is we can use it as an extra data point to start to understand some thematic things that are potentially going to be occurring interpersonally and then also personally, which is where we're starting to apply astrology to who we be. Am I talking too much, Lewis?
My mind, which is a blessing and a curse. It's like, how does it work? So I'm probably like the best one to have a podcast with on this topic. Cause I'll like, what about this? How does this work? So
I'm excited. That's why I have to stop talking.
First question. It's like, you're saying, where certain constellations are in certain places, it results in X, Y, Z, whatever shows up. Why is that? Firstly, my thought was it's like there's an energetic sort of flow that happens because of the alignment of, I guess, the constellation or whatever's happening. Start there. Start with that.
So depending on who I'm talking to, I'd explain this in different ways. Yeah. So that was why I said as a great entry point would be this idea of correlation first and foremost. So if we think about the idea that through observed history, when certain alignment happens, it's correlate with certain events. It's this idea of like, it could be any, you know, from that reality, this materialist view of reality, it's this idea that there could be any planet. It's not having a specific, it's not special in, as such, that this particular placement in the sky has created this result, right? So that's the very materialist view of it. It's just like, okay, Mercury is in Scorpio and now suddenly everybody is talking about sex and death. It's like, okay, cool. So that is an observable, like, material phenomenon. Experiential reality has been replicating that, like, through time. So that would be the materialist view of looking at it. Then we can start to get into the little bit more esoteric kind of component of it. So Mercury, so the names of the personal planets. So we've got our sun, we've got our, and I'm talking about the Western, I should say that. I'm a tropical or Western astrologer predominantly. So the seven personal planets are our sun, our moon, Mercury,
yep.
Venus, Mars, Jupiter and Saturn. And then we've got our three outer planets. So we won't talk about those. That's a new rabbit hole. So each of those planets are named after Roman gods. And if we think about what those gods were gods of, we can start to see the correlation. So Mercury was the god of communication and systems. Venus was the goddess of beauty and love. Mars was the god of war. Jupiter was the god of abundance and like prosperity. And Saturn was the god of time. So then we've got this kind of more mythical archetypal relationship with what's happening with the planets. And so through these observable histories of, you know, documenting the movements of Mercury, isn't it funny that every time Mercury moves, something does happen with our communications and our systems? It's like, happens to be the god of communication. Funny that. So then there's that archetypal layer. It's like the movement of the planets are actually moving things. The idea of what's moving the planets, also what's moving us on a collective unconscious level. So it's stimulating archetypal expressions in the collective unconscious field. Field of collective consciousness. Yeah.
Does this tie into, because my partner's into this and I love like just fucking with her about it. So does this tie into like where you're born as well? Is that astrology too? Like where you're born, what time you're born and stuff like that? And if so, how does that? Because that's, I think the one of the blocks that I'm still playing with is the limitation it can create, because my mind's very much like beliefs. It's like, I'm, because I was born here at this time with this, at this date, because of this constellation at time of whatever, I am this person, but it limits me to being this person. That's the part that still fucks with me. It's like, I can't, I am this and this is my destiny. So I'm controlled. I've got no control over my life to some degree. And that's the part I'm still playing with, even as this conversation. I'm definitely getting more, oh, that makes sense. But that's still, it's like, okay, I was born here. I'd love to actually map this out with someone I work together. I'm sure we will at one point. And it's like, okay, well, this is who I am, but I'll take the strengths of it, but I don't want to be limited to only being this person. Does that make sense? That's probably my biggest block that I have with this whole conversation.
And I can totally resonate with that. Like, big part of my philosophy is whenever I'm looking at something, like whether or not it's a tool, a modality, a system, does this enhance choice? If it doesn't enhance choice, typically I will discard it. You know, if it's too dogmatic, if it's creating too many rules, it's creating too many limitations, I'm not really interested, because I sort of see that we are this infinite potential, every single one of us.
Yeah.
Now, why would I use astrology then if we're infinite potential? Yeah. Data point. Again, you know, it sounds super scientific, but it's the idea that we either live in one or two versions of reality. One is that we exist in infinite chaos and there is no divine order. So it's like we are just happenstance floating through time. And the other side is that there is a divine order, that there is a divine governing intelligence that is creating our experience, which is a fun one to play with. So if we're going to play with that latter version of reality, that there is a divine governing intelligence, why would it not make sense that you chose to come into this material plane at a specific point in time, at a specific place? So if we play with that as a possibility, it's just like, okay, so as a soul, I chose to incarnate there, this particular point in time, at this specific place. And as we talked about before, planetary energies, we've mapped the idea that there are certain things that are being expressed or activated in the consciousness at specific times, depending when the planets are. Who's not to say that when we chose to incarnate, that we weren't giving ourselves a clue around the things we're here to express in this lifetime? It's like, right, these energies are aligning with what my soul is wanting to do or give to the world. I choose now. So then part of the way that I work with astrology is like, I'm using that as data to support someone to see like, right, your expression and part of your soul's gifts align with these specific things. Part of why I can talk so freaking fast and not shut up is because my Mercury is in Gemini. It's like, you know, I was either meant to be someone that used my voice for communication or I was meant to be working at the races. I'm not sure. We might find out later on.
Yeah.
But it's just like this idea of fluidity of communication is part of my natural expression. So then the other side of it is, and this is 100% relate to what you said about when people use it as a justification for shitty behavior or limiting themselves, that yeah. It's one of my bugbears as well. But it's more the idea that you can either be existing in the exalted expression or the shadow expression of your sign. So for you is this, you know, and I'm going to use the sun in Aries. It's like the Aries sun is here to shine. It is here to bring people into their boldness. It is here to bring people into their leadership. So like part of your gift is to activate that in the people around you and also to be a shining example of that. The shadow of Aries would be to be the tyrant, to be the person that won't, you know, deviate, the person that will sort of stay in their immaturity. So it's like, so you could use it as an excuse to do that. However, often when I'm working with astrology is I'm actually inviting people to see, it's like, right, these are the potentials for this placement. And if you were to lean into the expression of those, you'll find that things will just flow. That's the other thing that tends to happen is when people are actually working in alignment with the exalted expression of their sign, things just flow. It's like, oh, I feel like I'm expressing my innate gifts. Funny. It's just like there was data here. There was a blueprint that was giving you indication that that was possible.
Oh, there'll be, I've got like 10 follow-up questions, but we will have to wrap it up just because I do have a call after this podcast. I'd love to do part two if you'd love to come on for part two, and we'll go and just time it so we've got 2 hours instead of 1 hour. But for now, Jess, this is awesome. It's been a genuine hand on heart, absolute gift to be working with you and to be a client of yours and to have you shine your light on me and to bring your awareness to me and help be the sparky or the electrician connecting, I guess, the gap between me to allow me to regulate, to heal, to transcend and to do the work that we've done. So I just want to acknowledge that and just say thank you for that from a personal aspect as well. And I want to say for people listening as well, if they want to connect with you and find you and consume your stuff, jump into your world, become a client, just connect with you, where can they find you?
Best place to probably do that would be Instagram. So the Jessica Ann, that's where I'm most active. And also that link. Did you want me to say that or would you just pop it in the show notes?
Yeah, I'll put in the show notes as well. So I'll whack it down in the comments or the caption for people to jump into it as well.
Yeah, great place to get started. Just to you start doing that as a, you know, three times a week, you'll notice a difference. If not, DM me and tell me I'm full of crap.
Do you get any of those? Do you get any tinfoil hat people coming into your DMs and say you're full of shit?
I wish they would more, actually. No, I shouldn't say that. I've actually been really lucky. Most of the discourse that I have is really constructive. Like if people have ever had a block, they tend to be pretty open. Like, you know, that's where I'm very happy to have conversations with people that are open. Like maybe it's not working for me, but I'm open to the idea that it could. Whereas if you're already convinced it's not going to work, it's probably not going to work.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. Jess, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Liz.